Welcome to the ABPMR Part 2 Examination Podcast. If you're preparing to take the exam this year, listen in as ABPMR board directors, Part 2 examiners, and other Part 2 experts talk all things Part 2, including the structure of the exam, scoring, study tips, what to expect on exam day, and more.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the ABPMR Part 2 podcast. My name is Lizzie Johnston, and I'm the communications coordinator for the ABPMR. Today, we have a little bit different of an episode, so we're going to have several ABPMR examiners on to give you their best advice for studying for the exam. So first up, I'm joined by Dr. Shana Margolis. She's an attending physician at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in Chicago, Illinois. And Dr. Margolis, how long have you been an examiner for the ABPMR?
I've served as an examiner as well as an oral board exam writer for about 8 years.
Awesome. Okay. So you have almost a decade of experience with the Part 2 exam. Thinking through just the things you've learned over the years as an examiner and then thinking back on your time being a candidate yourself and preparing for the exam, what advice do you have for candidates who are preparing for the exam and studying?
Well, first of all, try to relax. It's not as scary as it always seems. We're just wanting to, enter in a dialogue with you using the clinical vignettes to try to determine your knowledge. And it's testing different areas than part one test. And so following through the vignette allows us to really get to see, how your mind is processing things, how you work through a case, which is what we're really trying to do. So it's not as scary as everybody always thinks it is. I think just, stay calm, go slow, and kind of methodically go through things. If you have a glitch or you forget something, just keep on going. Don't freak out. Just keep trying to move along and show us what you do know. So, try to stay calm, even if it's going great, wonderful. But even if you have a little slip up here or there, just keep on going and try not to let it get to you.
Right. And that's so important, too. It doesn't have to be perfect. They have a slip up. That's okay. As far as studying, do you have any ways that you studied that you think really helped when you were preparing for your exam or any other recommendations you would give for that?
So as far as studying goes, I reread the materials that I had read to study for part one, just to kind of help with my medical knowledge. Even though part two isn't really geared towards testing as much medical knowledge as it is the other domains, I still wanted to feel up to date so that when a case came at me, I had an idea of what they were talking about. So I reread the materials I had read for part one. But I think the key with part two is just that it is different and it is more of a dialogue. And what I found really helpful was, I was a fellow at the time, is my co-fellow and I would study together and we would make up vignettes for each other and just try to get used to going through the dialogue. We watched the video on ABPMR to see how they kind of do things. And then we would try to make things up for each other to just get used to going through a format, talking out loud, trying to go through the different areas. And it just was easier to get to practice it out loud since this is an oral exam. So partnering with a friend, a colleague can be really helpful. I was a fellow at Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, where I now practice. They also did a mock orals for us, which I found very helpful. So if your institution does something like that, that can be helpful as well, but definitely not required or anything like that. Just practicing talking out loud, I think, is important. So if your institution doesn't do it, then find a friend, a colleague, one of your former residents, and just, practice online to get used to talking out loud and working through things.
Definitely. And the fact that you practice with a fellow resident, I think, is important because it's going to be most helpful if you practice with someone who is kind of in the same situation as you and not necessarily someone like a family member or a spouse who doesn't have maybe the medical knowledge, because they're not really going to know what to look for. And their evaluation after you talk through cases will be most helpful if it's someone who has medical knowledge and a medical background. They'll really be able to give you good feedback. So I think that's important too, maybe finding someone in your institution or a mentor, someone who has the medical knowledge and they can give you really good feedback. Is there anything else you want to say to 2022 part two candidates?
I think just good luck. You're going to do great. Just rest assured you have the knowledge and you just want to stay calm and show us what you know. And you'll do great.
Yeah, show what you know. That's what the part two exam is all about. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. This was awesome advice. And I love that you kind of gave us an example of what you did for your own study method. And I'm sure a lot of candidates can find that useful for themselves as well. So thank you very much for your insight.
Well, and thank you for having me.
Today, we're joined by Dr. Ben Seidel. He's the program director for the PMR residency program at Burke Rehabilitation Hospital in White Plains, New York. And Dr. Seidel, how long have you been an examiner for the Part 2 exam?
So I've been an examiner for so many years, actually 1 year. The last awesome. Year was my first year.
First year, last year. So this will be your second year. I would love to hear your preparation advice for what you did for your own Part 2 exam.
Yeah, sure. I'm one of those people that things don't often come so easily. So I try to work as hard as I can and get as much as I can squared away and be organized about it. And I think for me, the format was the most important in learning. So once I knew the way that the exam was administered and sort of the process through it, that was just as important as the physical content. So I was lucky enough in my fellowship program to have co-fellows, and I think we had many a weekend night where we would just practice scenarios and just practice the format. And it wasn't so much like the content specifically that we were reviewing, but just making sure that we understand, like, this is what you do at first, and then you have to go in this part and then this part. And that made me feel a little bit more comfortable. And then once I understood the format, then I kind of pared down on the content. And there's a lot of stuff available on reviewing content, which I used either through various organizations or textbooks. But to me, I think holding myself away by myself in isolation was not a viable test strategy, because I wanted to make sure that, because it's an interactive test experience, that I incorporated that in my studying.
When you said you worked with some fellow residents, how did you kind of go through how the exam was going to look? Did you go through each domain, or did you practice giving vignettes to each other, or how did that look for you?
Same, both things. We would either give each other vignettes and then work through each of the domains that would be asked of us, or we would do things in isolation that we felt like we needed to work on specifically. So, you know, maybe it was part of the information gathering. Maybe it was part of analyzing what the case vignette looked like. Maybe it was interpreting data. It depended, I guess, on how we were feeling for the day or what we felt like we were weakest in.
Yeah. And when you were working with that group, did you do kind of the examiner candidate relationship, or how did you work through those vignettes?
We would each take turns, and each of us actually we took some turns writing or actually pretending we were creating the cases too, which I don't know how well that ended up, because sometimes some of them, I know that the cases are very carefully designed, and I don't think at the fellow level I was capable of designing cases, but we did it anyway, just so that we could thoroughly understand the process.
So that's a great insight into your own preparation and what you did for yourself. Do you have any other advice you would give to exam candidates for studying, just based on now being out of the exam yourself and being an examiner for 1 year?
I think one of the challenges that one of the things that I think has been challenging is understanding the nuances of interaction from a virtual platform. That's not something. So when I was, I guess, lucky enough to be in person, and I think the dynamics there are a little bit different. So I guess maybe if I was in a candidate's shoes now, I might do some Zoom practice just so that you get some ideas of like what that might look like and what that might feel like to be examined on a Zoom platform.
That's a great point, because obviously it is going to be a virtual exam. It's an oral exam, so talking over Zoom would be helpful. There's also ways you can test your video and audio over Zoom to make sure that's working. So
all of that is just extra preparation for the virtual exam day. So that's a great point to bring up. Do you have anything else you want to say to part two candidates this year?
Also just that I still strongly believe in the same things that I had done in terms, I thought that the testing strategies or studying strategies that I use were effective, and that I think understanding the format of the examination is part of the process of studying. And so more than just like memorizing every nuanced detail about spinal cord injury or brain injury or pain or, you know, whatever. It's also about understanding how a vignette is worked through the domains and understanding the format in and out. And I think if you understand that and you give confident answers, that's half the battle.
Definitely. And I encourage everyone listening to go back to the first two episodes of this podcast, if you haven't already, and listen to an overview of the exam and details about each domain, because those are really helpful resources for exactly how the exam is structured. And just like Dr. Seidel is talking about, the format of the exam can really help you just with that extra preparation for exam day. So thank you so much for coming on today and giving us all this great insight. And I'm sure the candidates will have some helpful advice for studying for the exam after listening to you. So thank you very much.
You're absolutely welcome.
Today, we're joined by Phoebe Scott-Wired, who is a pediatric physiatrist at Rady Children's in San Diego, and she's also part of the UC San Diego system. Thank you for coming on today, Dr. Scott-Wired.
It's my pleasure.
So how long have you been an examiner for the Part 2 exam?
Let's see. I think this is my fourth year, I want to say. I started like the year before the pandemic hit. So I started, I did 1 year in person as an examiner. And then since then we've been doing virtual. So.
Right. Awesome. So you have the experience from both. So just thinking through your time as a candidate and now your time as an examiner, what advice do you have for part two exam candidates who are studying for the exam right now?
First of all, I think we tend to get nervous when we do anything that has the word exam in it. And I think the big part of this piece of our board certification is really to see how we are able to explain our thought processes. And I think the best way to prepare for that is to practice. I mean, it's something we do every day with our patients anyway. So what I personally did is a very good friend of mine from my residency program, we scheduled a phone call every week for, I think it was like an hour maybe. And we split up like the list of kind of common diagnoses that we would expect to be tested on. And we would each kind of create little vignettes for each other. And one of us would be the examiner and the other one would be the examinee. And we would just practice talking through, what is my differential diagnosis? What are the tests that I might order? What kind of therapeutic interventions would I want to do? And then maybe make up a little role play. So it was really just practicing talking through your thought process. The other way you could think of it is as if you had a medical student working next to you and you were explaining everything you were doing, all the tests you were ordering and why, and why you would, recommend one treatment versus another to the patient and those types of things. And I think the more you're comfortable with doing that with a stranger, which a lot of our patients, that's kind of what we do every day, the more you'll be comfortable doing it in the proctored exam. The key is remembering that all of us that are the proctors that are examining, we've all been in the hot seat too. And it's okay also, I think, to take a second. Like if you are hearing a vignette and say, like, I do pediatrics, but maybe somebody who doesn't do pediatrics hears a pediatric vignette and they're just like, oh God, I have no idea. Then take a deep breath, take a step back and just do the best that you can. The nice thing is that you have multiple tries with different types of vignettes. So if one of them throws you for a loop, and even if you don't get the right diagnosis, like you can probably still talk through treatment or you can still kind of do a good job with the role play or, everything's graded separately. So taking your time with each separate section And if you totally mess up a section, you know what? It's done. It's behind you. Take a deep breath. This does not mean you're not a good doctor. It's not mean you're not meant to be a doctor. It's just one momentary slip up. Go on to the next section and try to leave it behind you. But having done that practice with my friend was so helpful for me, so that when I went into the exam, of course I was nervous, but it was a different kind of nerves. It was more like nervous of like the person sitting across from me versus, I don't know what I'm doing. And then for me, because we all, you know, tend to gravitate for the things that we really enjoy, and not all of us are going to be general rehab physicians. Some of the things on this test might be testing you on things that you haven't looked at since you left your training program. So I think it's important to look at, you know, the scope of the exam, and for things that you might not feel as comfortable with, reviewing those specifically. So if they do come up on the test, you're like, I haven't seen that in like 3 years, but, you know, review it so that when it, if it are, is going to come up on the exam, you feel more comfortable answering it and doing the best that you can, I think is the most important thing. But a big piece of this is, how do you talk to people? How would you interact with a medical student, or if you were teaching a resident or a patient and their family members? So a lot of it is your interpersonal skills, your ability, you know, to interact with a team and to guide a team. So, you know, I think that's the biggest piece, is to remember that we've all already been doing this for a long time. It just so happens that the person that you're talking to is grading you on it, but this is something we do every day, and to just kind of try and get in that natural feeling of how you would feel if you were with a medical student or a patient.
I love that you say, imagine like a medical student is shadowing you and just explaining everything, because that's the purpose of the exam, is explaining your thought process and exactly what you would do and why you would do it. I wanted to circle back to what you said about preparing for areas of the exam that maybe you don't practice in, so you don't feel as comfortable with. Do you have any advice for how candidates can prepare for the exam? Obviously, PMR is such a broad field. So how can they prepare for the exam, making sure that they are covering a lot of the specialty without going into every single detail of PMR?
I mean, I think for me, there's a lot of great study guides out there. There's a lot of, you know, looking at the core competencies that we all had to learn in residency, and kind of, you know, looking at the very general different areas of rehab medicine. And then if there are, you know, you can't obviously study everything, but it's similar to the themes, I would say, that we would study for our first, our written exam, or now the online exam, you know, feeling comfortable with all those different topics. And if you know there's an area that you're really weak in, then going and spending more time with that, I guess. We all kind of know coming out of residency, what was the one thing that you're like, oh God, I didn't enjoy doing that at all, and I'm not going to do that the rest of my life. Well, that's probably the thing you should study then.
Like you said earlier, even if you feel like you're not doing as well on a certain section on the exam, just trying to do your best and explaining your thought process is key. Do you have anything else you want to say to part two candidates this year?
I would say the role play, I've found can be challenging for some, because you're on a video, you know, and here someone's asking you to like, say, pretend I'm the sister and, or whatever, and trying to get you to show your communication skills. So I would say dive right in, like, you know, don't like go Jerry Springer about it, but like really try and be immersive and talk, you know. I feel like it really, your communication skills will come across much better if you actually try to be as immersive into that role play as you can within the constraints of doing this over Zoom.
Dr. Scott Wire, thank you so much for coming on today. This was amazing advice and so many good tips within this. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Today, we are joined by Dr. Alex Morose. He's the Residency Director and Vice Chair of Education at Rusk Rehabilitation at NYU Langone Health. Dr. Morose, welcome to the podcast today. We're so happy to have you on as a experienced examiner. How long have you been an examiner for the Part 2 exam?
Thank you. I have been examining probably for about 15 years. After a decade or so of being an examiner, and I started out in the old days when the the exam was a different exam, and mm-hmm. I have been through a lot of evolution of how the exam has changed. So after a while of being an examiner, I joined the exam committee. So now I participate in training other examiners and giving them feedback. And also I help with writing some of the exam vignettes.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So you have a broad idea of how the exam works from the examiner side and also behind the scenes of actually creating the exams. To start off, do you have any advice for part two candidates on the best ways that they can study and prepare for the exam?
Maybe the most unexpected advice is that ideally PM&R residents would start thinking about the oral examination when they start the residency. Because there's a there's a very particular way in which you think about patient cases during the exam. And I think that every incoming PGY2 resident should look at the ABPM&R video and description of how the exam is, look at the categories, and model their case presentations whenever they present in clinic or in the wards, and do it in that format to get used to thinking and talking that way, to get used to explaining and defending their opinion. So I would say that would be the most helpful, because this would give them essentially 3 years of practice with feedback from their faculty. The other advice is, as you get closer and you're in your senior year, and actually after the senior year, when you are in your fellowship or practice and you start studying for the exam, it is absolutely essential to practice with someone or something. If you have no one, you can record yourself and listen to how you sound. You can talk to your steering wheel or your pet. But ideally, you have a study buddy or a group where you talk about cases in the exam format. Because from what I've seen over the years, one of the biggest challenges for people who are not used to oral exam format in our school and college, this is not how people are tested. So this comes as a shock. The time pressure, having to answer quickly. So you need a bit of practice so that you sort of desensitize yourself to the format.
Definitely. And a couple of other examiners have talked about the importance of practicing with a partner as well. And I'll just reiterate the importance of someone who has medical experience and who's maybe in your fellowship program, and they can give you really good feedback. So it's not just someone that doesn't know what to look for as you're answering and going through vignettes. So that's important. I wanted to go back to what you were saying when you were talking about preparing for the exam using your real world practice and approaching patient cases like you would approach the exam. How would you recommend someone go about doing that? You said they could watch the ABPM&R videos, but then taking the content of the videos and then actually going into their practice, what could maybe be some useful tips for how they can shift their mindset preparing for the exam?
So in general, having the five domains in mind is helpful, because in every patient encounter, we are using those domains in some way. So kind of being mindful of where you are and making sure you address each domain. First of all, I think it may actually result in better patient care. But second of all, it really is going to get you used to thinking in that way. And especially the role-playing segment, the interpersonal communication skills. If you do this with your patients, with every patient, the way you should do it on the exam, I think you will have very, very happy patients, because this can also actually serve as your training device for patient care, not only for testing.
That's a great point. Yeah, definitely. And it could extend, that patient care could extend beyond the exam and after the exam's been taken. So you recommend just talking through all of the domains with the patients while you're doing the patient care approaching it that way. I would like to remind everyone the exam outline and the description of the domains are on our ABPMR website. And we also covered that in past episodes. So if you haven't looked at those resources or listened to those episodes yet, I recommend doing that just to get a handle on the structure of the exam and the domains. Is there anything else you want to elaborate on so far about what you said?
I thought I'd give you an example on
that'd be what great. I meant.
So a common thing that residents will miss when they are presenting patients to faculty is differential diagnosis, which is an entire part of an entire domain on the exam. And it is something that they implicitly are thinking about, but they're not necessarily verbalizing it or making it explicit. And I think that it's very useful to slow down during the case presentation and think about what could this be? What else could this be? What would be the worst thing this is? And if you have your differential diagnosis, then it makes it easier to think about diagnostic testing. It makes it easier to think about treatment. So I think that the exam framework gives you a very clear, logical way of thinking about patient cases.
And do you have any more advice for getting to that differential diagnosis?
There are various mnemonics for both general differential diagnosis, and there is a couple for the musculoskeletal differential diagnosis. So that's one way to think about it. The other way to think about it is to remember that you don't want to just think about PM&R differential diagnosis. You don't want to just think about musculoskeletal conditions. You want to think as a physician, where you're thinking about all of the possible conditions, whether they are within PM&R realm or not, that can explain the constellation of the story and the physical findings.
Well, that is amazing advice. Some good tips for candidates on using their real world practice to prepare for the exam, but also going back to role playing with a partner and making sure that they're getting feedback that way from a peer. So that is great advice for the candidates. Is there anything else you want to say to part two exam candidates?
If you find yourself very anxious and stressed out when you are practicing, one thing I've done with residents who have that issue is essentially desensitize them by training them to do this with even more pressure than the real exam would be. Like, ask your study partner to ask you questions very quickly and press you and disagree with you. And just make it difficult for you, because then the real exam will be a piece of cake. No one at the real exam is going to pressure right. you and make you uncomfortable.
Right.
But it helps in training.
Out. Right. Good to point out. Well, that is great advice. Again, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experiences and some great advice for candidates. So we really appreciate it.
My pleasure.